Log Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are presented to you by NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.fm. Check us out in the chat room. We want to get you on and popping. And I got to tell you guys, first thing off to start the show, I have a confession to make. Now, here's the deal. We had a horrible week of wild card football games. The Bengals-Jets game, that was pretty lame. The Dallas-Eagle game, that was a debacle if I've ever seen one. And then we had New England and Baltimore. That was a horrible game. So you pretty much had 12 consecutive quarters of bad football. And then you started out with the first quarter being up 17-0, Arizona over Green Bay. So after 13 quarters of unwatchable football, I fell asleep. All right? I literally fell asleep. It just put me to bed, and I missed the rest of that game. Luckily, NFL Network's going to hook me up because they're going to replay the game tonight at 8 o'clock. But truth be told, I missed the game. I missed 75% of the game, to tell you the truth. And I'm not afraid to admit it. It was a boring week of football except for that last game. And we've got some great guests to break it down here. We're going to be hearing from Darren Robinson of the University of Florida. He was on the 2006 National Championship squad. Adam Mendelson and Danny C. of Fox Sports Radio 1200 1460 down in Fort Myers. They're going to be calling in later. But right now, we've got Mike Hale of SportsRadio.com on the line. And Mike, I was man enough to admit that I fell asleep. Did you?
No, I watched the whole thing to the glorious end. What a game it was. I was like you a little bit worried at the first quarter, but once that second quarter, you saw Green Bay kind of start, and the second half, it was the showtime after that. A lot of fun.
Let me ask you this, because everybody's talking about it. The overtime play, the face mask that Aaron Rodgers fumbled the football, and pretty much that was the game there. And everybody's calling for a face mask penalty, but you know what? Aaron Rodgers, he's downplaying the whole thing. He's saying, listen, you know, we've had opportunities before, and, you know, the first play of overtime, they could have won the game right there. So I don't really feel sorry for the Packers at all. How about you?
Not at all. I mean, it was not a blatant grab. That was like his hand was swiping the ball and hit the face mask. Are you really going to flag that at that critical junction of the game? If you did, that official would have been ludicrous for something like that. No, if he was grabbed the face mask while that happened, I understand the outrage then. But his hand hitting the face mask, come on. That was not his intent. And it was such a minor thing that I can understand the officials letting it go.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, if the Green Bay Packers didn't put me to sleep literally in the first quarter, it would have been a little different outcome there. You have to play 60 minutes of football, and if you don't do that in the playoffs, the odds of you winning are very slim. So I don't feel sorry for the Packers. I don't feel sorry for them at all at this point in time. So how about Kurt Warner? I know a lot of people are debating Hall of Fame, not Hall of Fame. After that performance, does that change your opinion of him at all?
It does not change my opinion. I think he's a fringe Hall of Famer. It's just too many lean years. He came out of nowhere, had those few great seasons with the Rams, and then he pretty much disappeared when he went to New York. And then he went to Arizona, and he was so underwhelming that they brought in Leiner. And it wasn't until Leiner was really kind of fine that he was, okay, Warner, you got the shot, and that's when he took off again. You look at his great years, oh, they're some of the best. But the whole body of work you have to look at, and I just think he's a fringe at best. And this is just another highlight game, Warner. But he has those games followed by games that you wonder, what the heck is he thinking? He'll have that 5-touchdown game, then the very next game, throw the 4 picks, 2-fumble game. So you don't know which Kurt will show up from time to time. And that's why I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Well, let me put it to you this way then, Mike. Is there anything he can do throughout the rest of this playoff to maybe change your opinion, sway you the other way?
Well, if he does go on a super hot streak and lead him to the Super Bowl win, I will have to kind of think about it again, because rings talk. And I know he had led the Rams to that one Super Bowl, but that was Marshall Faulk's team, in my opinion, and all the weapons around him. This time, it's a little bit different. There's Fitzgerald, but he doesn't have that Faulk. He doesn't really have that running game. I know Beanie Wells has come along lately, but outside of Bolden Fitzgerald, and Bolden wasn't even there, this is really Warner's team, I feel like. If he does it this time, I'll give him a little bit more credit. Plus, the defense on this Cardinals team was nowhere near as good as that Ram defense was in 99.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I was looking at his stats, and, you know, he's got some huge playoff games. He's pretty much had a whole season worth of passing yards, and he's only played in 12 playoff games in his career. He's had 3,700 yards and 31 touchdowns. So, you know, now that
that quarterback rating is astronomical, too. Oh, he comes in the postseason, no doubt about that. It's just, I look at the whole body of work, and there's those games that Kurt Warner has where he absolutely just stinks it up. And he's a little bit too inconsistent for me to say he's a Hall of Famer. He is definitely a fringe guy, but I'm leaning toward no, but we'll see as he continues. And if he doesn't retire and comes back another year and lights it up again, you know, that just is more reason to kind of think it over.
104 quarterback rating in 12 playoff games. That's very tempting to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, when you play at crunch time.
Yeah, it's not like he's only played one or two. He's played 12 games, and he's going to play in a 13th this coming week. So how do you think that's going to play out as Arizona travels to Minnesota?
You mean New Orleans?
The New Orleans, rather. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's going to be another high-shooting game. Ironically enough, I think I'm a little bit more worried about the Saints' offense at this point than I am the defense. Their defense are getting those two corners back that have been missed through most of the year. I think their defense is going to be what it is, a little bit better than what it is. I know Grant's gone. They're going to have, Mackey, I believe is his name, coming in on those rushing situations. But you look at the team, and I think they're going to be all right on defense, at least. The offense that has been, if you look at the last few games, the offense the Saints had, they haven't really been lighting up the world. And they played some middle-of-the-road teams. That 17-point showing against Tampa really stands to mind for me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tampa Bay was, they were competing hard at the end of the season, and I got to give them credit for that, especially that they knocked off one of the top teams in the NFC. So, I mean, how do you see that going forward? Do you think that they've got their bye week and now they're rested, or do you think they're a little rusty coming in?
Yeah, I think they had a little bit more than a bye week since most of the offense didn't play against the Carolina Panthers in that final game, so they even had more time to rest. And I'm a little bit worried. I'm going to admit, I think it's probably going to be a little bit more rust. Arizona, yeah, they're coming off that overtime game, but they're coming in hot and excited, especially coming out that overtime win, that they're going to come out and they're going to really, I think, weather that emotional crowd. That crowd is going to be geared up. I think the Cardinals are going to kind of harness that crowd, and the Saints are going to find themselves in a little bit of a hole, and they're going to have to try hard to dig out of it.
And I'm your host, Football Rob. We are talking with Mike Hale of SportsRadio.com. You're listening to 8 in the Box. And also, Mike, I want to get your opinion on this. Since the Saints and the Colts, they're pretty much a timing offense where they have to be in rhythm and their passing offense has to be in sync in order for them to win. Do you think those extra couple of weeks of resting players and now the bye week comes in, do you think they're going to be as sharp as they were in midseason?
As far as both teams, I think not, especially with the Colts. I think the Colts have been resting a lot longer than the Saints. And it was a huge disappointment what the Colts did. And you look at their history, and when they've rested players, those few final 2 weeks or so when they had everything clinched up in the regular season, they've always stunk it up in the playoffs. It was that one year where they played all the way through and kept the guys that they actually did good. I think, and then the message that they sent with Buffalo, when they had Wayne and Clark in there getting their numbers, just you're saying 16-0 is not important, but getting those guys 100 receptions and their big numbers are. That's just, it real weird to me, and I have a feeling that karma's going to come back and kind of bite the Colts a little bit, especially with the Ravens, who I think match up very well with the Colts.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I noticed over the past few years that Peyton Manning, he struggles against a 3-4 defense, and he struggled against the the San Diego Chargers in the playoffs. He's also struggled against the Ravens in the past. And he hasn't put up big numbers against these particular teams. New England Patriots, another 3-4 team that he's had some difficulty with. So how do you see that matching up, Colts against the Ravens?
I'm going to be honest. I kind of like the Ravens in this one. You had the karma factor, which I'm kind of a big believer in. You angered the football gods by skewing 16-0. You're going for individual player achievement. That's strike one against you. Strike two is that the whole attitude of, well, history is not important. You look at our regular season, that we got most wins, most consecutive wins. That's a lot more important than 16-0, which is a bunch of BS. Really, are you really saying that having the most consecutive wins and the most wins in a decade? Let me ask you something, Football Rock. What team in the 70s had the most wins in the regular season? How about
Let's
the 80s?
See. Probably the Dolphins.
How about the 80s?
Probably the 49ers.
But you're not sure?
No.
It doesn't jump to your head?
No.
Do you remember the 72 Dolphins, though? Even if you weren't alive, you know the 72 Dolphins. I wasn't alive then, but I know the 72. Everyone knows the 72 Dolphins because, guess what? They went undefeated and won the title. That's my point. That I think that's going to be strike two, and I think the third is just that Baltimore matches up very well against them. They have Ray Rice that pounds, and Indy still struggles with the run game. They still struggle defending the run. You know the Ravens are going to control the ball, keep Peyton Manning, and pretty much it's going to be kind of a mirror of that Miami game earlier in the season with the Colts.
Yeah, they've struggled to stop the run for the last 10 years, and I don't think it's going to get any different in 1 week. And also, I think that Peyton Manning, he's not that clutch in the playoffs. You know, he won that Super Bowl, and he could thank Rex Grossman for that one. I don't think that Peyton Manning did anything special in that Super Bowl game against the Bears.
Well,
to win
the whole
it.
Playoffs, he didn't do anything special.
Yeah,
it was that defense that was really kind of it was kind of bizarro Colts in a way that it was the defense leading him on to that charge.
That's right, and Bob Sanders was fully healthy for that playoff run they made. So do you think that factors into anything, like, you know, in terms of picking the Ravens? You know that Peyton Manning's not a big-time performer in the postseason. Do you think that's going to continue?
I have a feeling it probably won't continue, but I just think the Ravens are just going to come out there. They're going to pound the ball. They've gotten a lot better in their pass defense. They're going to be physical with those receivers, which is the way to do it in that 5-yard bump zone. And they're going to give the Colts all they can handle. I thought the Colts were probably going to get the Jets because I was kind of shocked that the Ravens did what they did to New England. And I like the Colts better against the Jets, but I have a feeling that it's going to be San Diego and Baltimore in that AFC Championship game.
Ooh, that's quite a call there. So going over to the other game there, we've got San Diego and the Jets. And the Jets, I feel as though the Jets had their Super Bowl this past week. Because if you were to tell me that a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach would go into a road game against Cincinnati and win, I would be pretty much satisfied. And whatever happens now, it's all gravy. So would you agree that they pretty much won the biggest game of the year last week?
I think they won it the week before against the Bengals. I know they were geared up to play, but I thought that the Bengals would probably be a little bit better. I actually had the Jets winning that game, but I was really surprised by Mark Sanchez. I mean, the guy had absolutely struggled and regressed to the point that they were pretty much saying, okay, Mark, we're only going to throw it when we absolutely have to, when we have no other choice but to throw it. Otherwise, we're just going to have you go back and hand off. That's how far he regressed. This isn't like Flacco and Harbaugh or even Ryan and Smith of last year, where they felt the quarterbacks were coming along and both of them were really doing good, that they felt comfortable having those guys and opening up the offense. This is completely different. And I just have a feeling that Mark Sanchez is going to revert back. I think he did play the game of his life last week, and we're going to see the Mark Sanchez we've been seeing this year.
Oh, Mark Sanchez, they definitely play conservative with him, and you know, you could see a lot of third and sevens when they were in field goal range. They would probably, you know, rather run it rather than pass it. But I think the real story of the game was Ocho Cinco. He sucks. I mean, in terms of if you could write a book on how to suck in a big game, this guy would write a bestseller. You know, he did absolutely nothing, and I thought that Darrell Revis totally got in his head. So do you think he should change his name back to Johnson, for crying out loud?
Well, I think he should go back to Chad Johnson, because what happened to him, I don't think he really struck as much as he hit the Defensive Player of the Year, in my opinion, Darrell Revis. The guy is probably the best shutdown corner we've seen since maybe Deion back in the day, although I wouldn't put him just there. He's on the verge of becoming that, though. You look at all the receivers he shut down all throughout the year, and this guy is just absolutely amazing. He pretty much did it to Chad. And it's like the only time Chad really got his catches were when Revis was playing off him and said, okay, Chad, go ahead and have it. Other than that, Chad was completely shut out. And then Carson Palmer, if you're a Bengal fan, what happened to Carson Palmer is another worry. The guy looks completely different from the quarterback he was. And I know the knee injuries and everything else, but wow, there were a lot of balls he threw were sailing up and over the receivers. That did not look like the Carson Palmer that used to be. And I don't know what exactly happened to him, but whatever happened, hopefully he gets it back, because when Carson Palmer's good, that's just another fun thing in that AFC North to watch the Bengals, Steelers, and Ravens go at it.
Well, one thing that I did notice about that, Mike, is that Carson Palmer and his receivers, they couldn't get on the same page, and that's where I go back to Chad Johnson. I think Revis got in his head a little bit, because he doesn't want to go to where the route was supposed to go. He's like cutting his routes off. He's, you know, it's like a miscommunication, and I think that's due to Revis just watching it on TV, and that's why I'm so hard on Chad. I mean, the guy was talking so much crap coming up into this game, and he had, what, one reception? It's like, you know, I think he should change his name to Zero Dos, because that's what his career playoff record is. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and that was also Zero Dos, his two catches for the game, too. I absolutely agree with you, but that's what Chad does. Chad loves to talk smack, and most of the time he'll get away with it. But when you're going up against a guy like Revis, that's just more fuel. There's no one I know who studies more film than Revis. You hear about all the time with announcers. The guys in the tape room, I mean, he took tape home in the offseason of all the opponents he was going to watch and all the wide receivers he was going to be facing, learning their tendencies and what they like to do. The guy is just an amazing guy, and Chad Johnson just pretty much angered the wrong beast. And Chad pretty much paid for it. He was, or should I say, kept quiet, didn't really pay for it, but was kept silent. And that, you know, and Chad Johnson, that had to kill him, knowing he can't say anything.
Yeah, he certainly can't. And the other game that we've got a review here, the Philadelphia Eagles. What happened to them? I mean, they did absolutely zippo offensively, and everybody's going to point to Donovan McNabb, and everybody's going to want him to, retire or leave or do something and get out of Philly. How do you feel about Donovan McNabb?
I like McNabb. I know he's gets all the heat. When he's doing good, he doesn't seem to get the praise he deserves, and when he's going bad, he gets beaten up like no one else. It's amazing that he's so underappreciated. I don't really blame McNabb. The offense is what it was. The offense is kind of like that big slugger in baseball who hits 200 but has 40 home runs. Yeah, they won't hit the ball, but when they do, wow, look out. And that's kind of what the Eagles' offense was. They hit those big plays, but if they didn't, they really didn't do much outside of those big plays. And I wasn't really that shocked, because Dallas had Philadelphia's number. When they shut him out, the Eagles absolutely had to have and absolutely mauled him. You can tell how this thing was going to go. There was not going to be enough time in 1 week for the Eagles to adjust to that whooping that Dallas laid to them. And what happened? We got another whooping. And it wasn't that surprising. I know McNabb gets a lot of heat, but I think he deserves another shot. This team's going in the right direction. You get a consistent ground game going. I know Weaver did a good job, but they really need kind of that feature back to take Westbrook's place if he retires, and I think the Eagles be kind of set.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, everybody's talking about McNabb being finished. I think the real player that's finished is Brian Westbrook. His best days are clearly behind him, and I think they have to move on with that and try to find another running back to complement McNabb. Shady McCoy's done okay. Weaver's done okay, the fullback, but, you know, they really need to address that in the offseason. I think that's the real concern. They don't have a running game, and even if they did, that's the problem with them.
Well, even when Westbrook was in a prime, they didn't have a running game. Reed doesn't like to run the ball.
Yeah, that's the other problem. That's the other problem. They don't run. Even if they had a big bruising running back, they wouldn't even use him.
Yep. But it would open so much more if they had that kind of power running game, or just even a semblance of a running game, because all of a sudden the play action comes into play, and with those home run hitters, Macklin and Jackson outside, it just looked out.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, the defense didn't show up either. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box on FSC.FM, collegefootballinsiders.com, and also NFLDraftBible.com. We've got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Mike Hale after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at blogtalkradio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com/baseballgeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the billions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet.
Seven continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday.
Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday.
30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, and we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We still have Mike Hale of SportsRadio.com on the line. Thanks for being patient, Mike. A lot of things going on outside of the NFL playoffs. We've got Pete Carroll and that weird situation leaving USC, pretty much a powerhouse football program for the last decade, in favor of the Seattle Seahawks. I bet you didn't see that one coming.
I was a little shocked by that. Yeah, that came out of left field. I wasn't so surprised with Mora firing. When the news came out that Mora was fired, okay, well, I can understand that. But then you started hearing Pete Carroll is going there. I was like, really? Oh, wow. And when it hit, my first reaction was, well, Seattle, you just got yourself a very overrated coach. Congratulations.
So,
Pete Carroll... Well, he's great for the college game. I think he's an absolute perfect in the college game. He's a rah-rah type, great recruiter. But you look at how USC did against teams that had as much talent as them, they weren't that good. And then you look at what they did against teams that were real bad. And that goes to coaching. When you can't get your players up to beat teams that are real bad and you're supposed to beat, and you have trouble and you get out-strategized with other coach on games where you're kind of even, that kind of says a little bit about your coaching. In the NFL, you don't really have that old loaded roster against a team that's, you know, with a bunch of guys from Wichita Falls or wherever.
Yeah, there's no Wichita Falls State and Cockadoodle-Doo A&M on the schedule there. But you never know, because the Rams are on their schedule. They're in the NFC West. And
that's true.
And then the 49ers are not that good either. So, you know, but whatever. But my first reaction was when I heard Pete Carroll trying to go to the NFL, I was thinking, like, boy, he must have really screwed that up with Reggie Bush and his boosters and all that, and the sanctions that the NCAA might levy down on USC. And plus, you also got to remember, there are rumors going around that he had an affair with a grad student. Now, these are just rumors right now. We don't know the truth, but I think something's going to go down in terms of, you know, USC and having some kind of controversial ending to the Pete Carroll era. And I think that could be part of the reason why he wanted to jump ship and get out so soon.
That could be, too. I think he was also kind of waiting for that right opportunity. You heard it several times that he wanted to stay out west. I know the Falcons thought they had Carroll, and he decided he didn't want to move out to the east and move to Atlanta. Really, he wanted to stay out to the west because he loves the West Coast. And he wanted to be in a situation where he'll have control. He didn't want to have a guy that he had to answer to. He wanted to have pretty much football say. And while he won't exactly have total football say, he'll have enough control, and he'll just have a guy that he has to kind of run it through, make sure everything's okay and going smooth. Just a little bit weird, but it's still more control. He's the one bringing the players and everything that he wouldn't have had in pretty much other situations. I know he would have liked San Francisco maybe, but the situation wasn't right because of the York and the power structure there. And in Seattle is the perfect fit for him. So we'll see how he does.
And speaking of Seattle, the old coach for the Seahawks, Mr. Walrus lookalike there, Mike Holmgren, he decides to go to the Cleveland Browns, and he keeps Eric Mangini, a guy who got run out of town in New York just last season, but he won his last four games as a head coach for the Cleveland Browns this year, four games in a row to finish out the season 5-11, and Mike Holmgren thought that was enough to keep him on board for 2010. Do you agree with that decision, Mike?
Surprisingly, I do. Earlier in the year, you asked me if Benji, no, I would have said, no way he's coming back. This guy was a big mistake. But then you look at it, the Jets went 9-7 last year, and they ran him out of New York because they missed the playoffs. Guess what record there was this year? 9-7, although this time they went to the playoffs. So you can't really say, ooh, Mangini was such a bad coach. I just think his style and his personality and the way he is doesn't really rub off well on the media and fans and his attitude. But you look at what he did with that Cleveland roster, how he pretty much gutted it, and they have 11 draft picks coming up in this draft. He left it pretty much loaded to be rebuilt, and he's got the guys he wants in there. You can tell they're actually building something. So in this case, I absolutely agree. I did not think they were going to win five games. I had them at 2-14 when the year started. I said, oh, Browns, they're 2-14, and they'll be lucky to get two. And they overachieved. And you look at the roster and everything they've done, and Genie deserves another shot.
Well, you know, he's doing well, and he did better than I thought he would do also. You know, being 1-11, I thought that that's how they were going to finish it. They were going to finish the season with about two or three wins, but he did rally his troops, and it's funny because when you're a team that's 1-11, you tend to quit, and they didn't do that, and they pretty much rallied around something. I don't know what he did to get them to win four in a row, but he did his thing, and even though I don't think he's any good, and I think eventually he'll be proven to be a fraud, but, you know, being that he won four in a row, you gotta keep him for this coming season. Even though I don't like him, and you know, I still believe that he'll falter down the stretch. But you know, you win four in a row when you're 1-11, that has to count for something. So I definitely agree with that one. The last thing I want to get your opinion on, Mike, we've got Mike Shanahan, who for some reason thinks that he can turn it around in Washington, so he goes to the Redskins with the most meddling owner in the history of humankind, and I don't think that's going to work at all. I don't see why it would be any different now that Shanahan's there. How do you feel?
I absolutely agree. It depends on which Dan Snyder shows up. I grew up a Redskins fan. I love the Redskins, and the guy absolutely destroyed my love for the team. At one point, I said I want nothing to do with this team. I reneged my Redskin fanship, and then it wasn't until Taylor died that I was like, you know what? I can support the team and the guys playing and just not buy any Redskin stuff, anything like that, because that goes to his pockets. I'm not supporting him, whatever. And it depends on which dictator Dan, as I like to call it, shows up. If it's the guy who says, I know it all, I am the football Mac, and I will prove it, then Shanahan pretty much is going to be like every other Redskin coach that has come through there, two and done, one and done, and see you later. But if Snyder actually goes through with his vow to just let his football people do everything and just dish out the checks, then I think this has a shot of turning around in Washington.
Yeah, but what are the odds of that?
Snyder.
That's my whole point, though. The odds of him just laying back in the weeds and not meddling with anything, the odds of that happening, you know, I might as well just, like, get hit by lightning three times in a row.
Yeah, I think it's like Jerry Jones when Bill Parcells was there or when Jimmy Johnson was there. He'll sit back for a few years, and then the itch will just get him that he, all the greats, okay, no, I could do this. Let me do it. I watch this guy. I know I can do this. Go, I've got this now. And I have a feeling after a few years that Dan Snyder's going to return because I think he can't help himself.
Yeah.
But I think for the first few years, he's going to be the perfect donor in like the crafts where you give out the checks to the Roonies. You give out the checks and let your organization do the work and pretty much just sit back and oversee everything and bring in what you need when something needs to be changed.
That's going to be interesting to see. I'm definitely pessimistic. As a former Redskin fan who also gave up my fanship when this clown took over, I'm definitely pessimistic. But I want to thank you for calling in, Mike. It's Mike Hale of SportsRadio.com. Check out his site. Mike, call back anytime.
All right. Thank you very much, Football Rob. You have a great one.
All righty. Sounds good. That was Mike Hale breaking it down like only he can. SportsRadio.com. Check out that website when you get a chance. Also, check us out, FSC.FM, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and NFLDraftBible.com. We're going to take another commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. We all know that he's a fraud, okay? But I'm going to tell you why he's a fraud, and it kind of has to do with Bill Parcells. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at BlogTalkRadio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at BlogTalkRadio.com/BaseballGeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the millions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet.
Seven continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday.
Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday.
30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lamming, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
And we are back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob, presented to you by All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. Check us out in the chat room. Get involved. Do something with your life. So, anyways, before the break, I announced that Tony Romo was a fraud. I still believe that, even though he had a great game against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I still think that they will eventually, the wheels will fall off this team. And it looks like they're poised for a letdown. Everybody's drinking their Kool-Aid right now, but I still see a phony in Tony Romo. And it has to go back all the way to 2006 with Bill Parcells. And the reason I say all of that is because I remember when Tony Romo took over for an ineffective Drew Bledsoe, and he got off to a pretty hot start. And what happened was, all the reporters were all over Tony Romo, thinking he's the next great thing, and then Bill Parcells comes out and says, hey, put the anointing oil away. You remember that quote? Put the anointing oil away. That's kind of like saying, in coach speak, to me, when I translate that, it means he's not that good, relax. And Bill Parcells is a great evaluator of talent. This guy knows football inside and out. Look what he's done in Miami. He takes a 1-15 team and he brings them to the playoffs the following year. He knows how to draft. He knows how to build a squad. And if he says that Tony Romo is not that good, you know what? I'm going to believe him because Bill Parcells would not have given up on a star quarterback. If he thought Tony Romo was a star, he would have stayed in Dallas. And, you know, when I bring this point up, everybody says, oh, yeah, well, Bill Parcells left for other reasons. He left because Jerry Jones is a control freak. He left because T.O. is a problem child, and he was on the team at that time. He left for all these other reasons. But you know what? If you have a franchise quarterback, you can put up with all this nonsense. You know, if you have a guy that can win games and be clutch and throw for thousands of yards and all that stuff, you can put up with a meddlesome owner. You can put up with a crazy wide receiver. But since Tony Romo, in the opinion of Bill Parcells, from what I'm gathering reading the tea leaves, he didn't think he was worth the trouble. It's like, why am I going to put up with T.O. and Jerry Jones when I don't even have a franchise quarterback? And it's for that reason that I still think, despite him playing very well in the game against Philadelphia, still think he's a fraud. And also, the other thing I don't like about Dallas, Sean Sweezum. That guy is going to cost them. He is a horrible field goal kicker, and he was cut by the Redskins. If you're cut by the Redskins, how good can you possibly be? I mean, come on. And I know he hit a long field goal, a 48-yarder against Philly, but that's when there was no pressure on, and they'd already had a sizable lead at that point in the game when he hit that field goal. Because I'm looking here, there was no scoring in the first quarter. Second quarter, it was 7-0, 7-7, 14-7, 17-7, 24-7. So when it's 24-7 in the second quarter, Sean Sweezum hit a 48-yarder. I mean, you know, I didn't think he was going to hit it, but there was absolutely no pressure on him. Let's see what happens this coming week, when the game's probably going to be a little closer and you've got a guy like Brett Favre putting points up like it's nobody's business. And also you've got to account for Adrian Peterson, Chester Taylor, and Sidney Rice has come on as well. But I think Dallas' defense is good, but I still think the offense is suspect. And plus you got to remember, they never run Marion Barber. He's the most physical runner in the NFL, and he gets 9 carries a game. It's like, I mean, what do you do? Why do you abandon the run and let Tony Romo throw it 50 times? I don't understand that logic, Jason Garrett. I don't get it. It's just, you know, maybe it's over my head. Maybe it's too complicated for me to understand. But, you know, when you have a 230-pound running back that punishes everybody in his way, I'd give him the football. That's just me. Just me. Maybe I'm crazy, call me crazy, but I kind of would give the ball to a destructive running back and, you know, play off of him. But that's not the case in Dallas, and that's why I'm down on them. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box, powered by All Access Football, collegefootballinsiders.com, NFLDraftBible.com, and FSC.FM. There is absolutely no action in the chat room. Guest 297, I am calling you out. You have to say something. You have to type something. If you disagree with something I've said, if you agree with something I said, or if you don't care about anything I've just said, you've got to type something. You got to let me know that you're alive. You got to let me know you've got a pulse out there, because it's killing me. You're just taking up space in the chat room, and you're not really contributing, so I'm calling you out, my friend. Now, anyways, going back to the NFL. we've got to break down a couple other matchups here. We didn't really get to this one. Jets in San Diego. The Jets go from a freezing cold Cincinnati to a beautiful sunny San Diego, where it's beautiful and sunny every single day. I think that might help out Mark Sanchez a little bit. Because remember, he's a Cali guy. He's used to the gorgeous weather in January, and he was playing out of his element last week and in the last few weeks, as a matter of fact. So I think he'll actually play better than what he's played in the last couple of weeks. Not to say that he's played poorly, but he's been up and down. He definitely has been up and down. He did his thing this past Saturday, definitely kept his team in the game, did enough to win. But I think that this game could be his coming out party. He's either going to suck so bad that you'll never forget it, or he's going to be throwing for 3 touchdowns and 255 yards. I don't think you're going to see a Mark Sanchez that's going to go 10 for 15, 140 yards, and no turnovers. I think this is either going to be a great game for him or a horrible game for him, because in the playoffs, you have to threaten the field a little bit, and they haven't done that. Sean Green had a great game last week, 21 carries, 135 yards, and a touchdown, and they controlled the ball on the ground. But, you know, eventually in the playoffs, I know the whole adage, you have to run the ball, you have to stop the run, you have to do all that stuff, but in the playoffs, you have to make plays. You have to make plays down the field. You have to have an explosive offense. You have to do something to threaten a defense, and now's the time. Now's the time for them to take off the diapers and see if he can go potty all by himself. So he's either going to fall flat on his face, or he's going to do extremely well. Now, which Mark Sanchez will show up, we have no idea. We have absolutely no clue. But that's what I'm saying. He's either going to be great or terrible. And the rest of the Jets playoff hopes pretty much ride on him. So that's the way I'm calling it. I could be wrong, but that's the way I'm calling it. But, you know, we got to actually talk a little college football now, because we've pretty much exclusively talked NFL football throughout the course of the show. We got to talk a little college ball here. We got to talk a little Colt McCoy going on here. Now, Colt McCoy, in case you guys don't remember, all right, it was the national championship game against the Alabama Crimson Tide, and on the second possession of the game, Colt McCoy gets a routine hit. All right, it was the most routine, run-of-the-mill, average-looking hit that I've ever seen, and the guy gets knocked out of the game. You know, what the hell is going on with that? How do you get knocked out of a game from a routine hit? I've never seen that in my life. And it got me thinking about some conspiracy theories. Alright? It got me thinking of some real big-time conspiracy theories that have to do with protecting his NFL future versus winning a game in college that's like pretty much the Super Bowl of college. So I'm going to get into that right after this break. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at blogtalkradio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com/baseballgeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the billions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, Daily Podcast, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your fantasy sports failure syndrome now.
Fantasy versus reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet.
Seven continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday.
Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday.
30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lamming, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, we are back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are powered by All Access Football Radio, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.fm. Now, what I was talking about before the break, Colt McCoy and my little conspiracy theory about getting injured and not coming back into the game. Now, we all know that I don't like Colt McCoy. I don't think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. He's too anxious to leave the pocket. He doesn't read his progressions, yada, yada, yada. He can't take a hit, all that stuff. But that's besides the point. The point is, Colt McCoy does have an NFL future. He will be drafted by an NFL team, and he did get hit on his throwing shoulder. So what happens is, I think Colt McCoy, maybe he didn't want to go back in the game. Maybe he didn't want to go back in the game because he's got millions of dollars on the line in about 4 months. Or whenever he signs with his team, I don't know, but, you know, contract holdout, whatever. But he'll be drafted in April, and he'll sign a contract within from April to September. So within the next 8 or 9 months, he'll be a millionaire, pretty much. Wherever he goes, we don't know where he goes, but he's probably going to be a millionaire. So he's got to protect his right arm. Now, Texas, although they want you to believe, and I'm not just calling out Texas, I mean all college athletics, the particular teams, in this case Texas, they don't care about Colt McCoy's NFL future. They don't have him. They're not associated with him after he finishes his college eligibility. You know, it's not as if Texas gets a cut of the contract that he signs in the NFL. It's not like Roger Goodell cuts the check. Oh, here's $20 million, Texas. Thanks for this prospect named Colt McCoy. They don't get anything out of it if their player goes pro. They get prestige. They get, you know, they get, you know, that's about all they get. Prestige and, oh, you know, he's my guy. He went to Texas and all that. But truth be told, after you're done playing for that university, they don't care. So I would assume that Colt McCoy says, I don't want to go back into the game. And then Texas said, no, boy, you're going back in the game. You're going back in because we don't have you next year. So you're going back in the game. You like my little Texas accent there? I practiced it. I don't know how good it sounds, but that's what it is. So I think there was a little tug of war there, and then you saw Colt McCoy's father go into the locker room when this whole thing was going on, and the tug of war between I want to protect my NFL future versus, boy, we don't care about your NFL future. We got to win this bowl game right here. So, and that's why I think it took so long during the halftime report to tell, oh, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? Now, I have no proof of this. We'll never know the truth. But I think that's why it took so long for them to announce he's not coming back into the game, because there was a little tug of war going in there. Colt McCoy and his father didn't want him to play, and Texas did. And, you know, Texas could say all they want, oh, we want to protect his NFL future. You don't care about his NFL future. You know you don't care. Your job as a college university, your job is to win this bowl game and win the national championship at all costs. That's your job. You don't care, oh, we got to prepare him for the NFL. We got to make sure he's healthy for the NFL. No, you don't. You really don't. So don't blow smoke up my butt and tell me that, oh, we care about his NFL future, because you don't. There's no incentive for Texas to care about Colt McCoy's future, whether he is a great NFL quarterback or an awful NFL quarterback. There's no incentive for Texas to care about that. They don't care. And again, it's not just Texas. It's all of college sports. Once you're done there, they don't care. Now, if you do go on to have a great college, if you do go on after your college days and have a great NFL career, that's just gravy for the university because they get notoriety. Oh, this guy went to our college. You know, then you could use that in a recruiting conversation with a potential athlete. You know, but in terms of what monetary value that has for the university, if Colt McCoy has a great NFL career, none. They don't get anything out of that. So that's my little take on that. And also in that game, I noticed that Cody's going to be horrible. The defensive tackle for Alabama, that guy, he's a fat bastard, and he can't move in space, and he whiffs on every time they use him in the backfield as a fullback, he whiffs on every block. He's definitely going to be a bust. There's no question in my mind that Cody is not going to live up to his potential at the NFL level. McClain, however, now there's a ball player. Rolando McClain, the linebacker for Alabama, he's got all the instincts, the speed, the athleticism. He's got the willpower that Cody doesn't have. He's going to have a great NFL future. And, you know, I was just looking at all those prospects in that game. There's so many guys. Mark Ingram, oh my goodness. And this guy's just a sophomore. But here's the thing about Mark Ingram. I get really sick and tired of people talking about Emmitt Smith. Oh, he's the next Emmitt Smith. Can we at least compare him to a very good running back? Do we have to compare him to a Hall of Famer right now? Can we just say he's very similar to Fred Taylor or something? Can we just say that before we, you know, move him up into Hall of Fame status? The guy's only 19 or 20 years old. Come on. Comparing him to Emmitt Smith already? Can we stop that? Do we always have to do that? Oh, Julio Jones, he's the next Jerry Rice. Oh, this guy, he's the next Chris Carter. Can we have it in increments? Now, I'm not saying Mark Ingram's a bad player. I think he's going to be a great player. But before we call him Emmitt Smith Jr., can we at least just start off by seeing if he can live up to Fred Taylor status? And then once he gets to Fred Taylor status, then you could maybe talk about Emmitt Smith. But could we just hold off on that for a minute? Really? And Julio Jones, he's another great prospect that was in that game. Another great prospect in that game. That guy is just, you know, his quarterback is not that great. And I know he's stepped up. McElroy stepped up, and he's done better than expected, but he's still not, you know, a top-notch quarterback. So once Julio Jones has a top-notch quarterback that he's receiving passes from, watch out. Watch out for this guy. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box, powered by All Access Football. We've got absolutely nothing going on in the chat room, man. You guys got to do something about that. You got to make a play. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and by the time we get back, we will definitely have something going on in the chat room. Stay tuned.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at blogtalkradio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com/baseballgeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the millions of American fantasy owners who suffer from fantasy sports failure syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our fantasy draft guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your fantasy sports failure syndrome now.
Fantasy versus reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet.
7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday.
Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday.
30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
And we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We're powered by All Access Football. Check us out, NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. That's right, it's time for the mock draft. I'm doing my mock drafts already. We only have 3 minutes remaining in the program, so we'll just go over the top five or so. All right, number one. The Rams. Oh my goodness. The Rams suck so much. They have so many holes to fill. I have no idea where they're going to go with this pick. They could go Jimmy Clausen. They could go Ndamukong Suh. But you know what? It seems as though they have a need at quarterback. Because remember, Mark Bulger, here's a guy who had a broken leg and a concussion in the same game. If that doesn't tell you he's totally finished, I don't know what will. So for right now, that's like totally up in the air, because you remember Spagnuolo is now the head coach and he's a defensive guy. He can go with Ndamukong Suh, and then you'd have a nasty defense right there. You'd have Sue, you'd have Chris Long, you'd have Leonard Little, you'd have Laurinaitis up there. Adam Carricker might be back. I mean, that looks pretty nasty right there, and you could win a lot of games by having a nasty defense, plus a guy like Steven Jackson going up there. That would be great. And then the Lions can go any number of ways also. They could go Russell Okung. They could go Eric Berry. They could go Gerald McCoy. But I would say that I think Gerald McCoy or Berry would be the two front runners. You know, you need pressure on the quarterback, and what better way to do that than to get a quick defensive tackle like this Gerald McCoy, who might be the next Tommy Harris. He has a very good chance of doing that, so I would say Gerald McCoy makes a lot of sense at two. Number three, you got to go Berry, because the Bucs have always been a defensive team, and what better way to keep your rookie or second-year quarterback off the field than to have a great defense and just, you know, control the game with your defense and just have your quarterback do enough to win the game. So that makes sense there. And then the fourth pick that I would have Redskins, I got to go Russell Okung, Oak State. Because, you know, everybody's thinking Jimmy Clausen or Sam Bradford or something like that. But whoever you pick at quarterback is going to get murdered behind that awful offensive line. So I don't think it would be a prudent thing to do to take a quarterback. Although I like Clausen, I don't think that they have the team around him yet where he could make an impact at all. I don't think so. But, you know, Daniel Snyder would not pass on a franchise quarterback. So I would go Okung, but I think the Redskins will go Clausen. Let me put it to you that way. If I were running the team would be like, you know, 12-4 every year. But that's not the case. And finally, number five overall. I mean, if Okung doesn't go to the Redskins, I'd have to slate him at number five with Kansas City, because they're in a rebuilding mode and they got to protect their passer right there. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this show. I want to thank Mike Hale of SportsRadio.com for calling in and participating. I want to thank NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, FSC.FM. We're powered by All Access Football. I'm your host, Football Rob, signing off.